places. So, and okay, it looks like it is recording.
Okay.
So we should, and it is. You can tell if it's recording with a little these guys. So I think we're in good shape. Yeah.
Shall we go?
Yeah, okay. It's recording.
So after our brief technical intermission, we will call the roll, if you wouldn't mind.
Second. Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here. A quorum is present. We shall proceed, beginning with communications. Could you please read the title for communications item number 1322?
A request of Dave Megan to address council regarding activism and social justice.
Mr. Megan, thanks for waiting. Sorry for the delay.
Thank you for your patience, too.
Please have a seat. Is our clock working, Carla? Okay, so that clock in front of you will count down your 3 minutes. You only need to give us your first and last name. And if you're a lobbyist representing any, authorized to represent any organization, we need to know that as well.
My name is Dave Megan, that's M-A-G-I-N, and I represent me. And I thank all of you for your hard work, and I have somewhat harsh words to say regarding TriMet. Nonetheless, in perspective, it is the best transportation system on the planet. But I am worried that fare inspectors are being diverted and becoming aides to the immigration federal authorities, and I am distressed by that. I see that as a misuse of TriMet's authority. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Can you please read the item for communications 1323?
Request of Randy Toole to address council regarding activism and social justice.
Mr. Toole. Okay, move on. Can you please read the communications item 1324?
Request of Victor Mena to address council regarding activism and social justice.
Mr. Mena. All right, can you please read communications item number 1325?
Request of Melissa Sarabia to address council regarding activism and social justice.
Ms. Sarabia, welcome.
Hello.
Glad you're here.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Sarabia, and I'm here representing Portland State MECHA. We are a student organization committed to our community. We promote higher education, promotion of our culture. We promote higher education, preservation of our culture, and political involvement. On behalf of our chapter and chapters across the nation, we condemn the collaboration of ICE and local law enforcement. The program Secure Communities is allegedly focusing on high-risk immigrants convicted of serious crimes. In Multnomah County, the majority of those who end up in custody of ICE have committed only minor crimes, or often not no crimes at all. Among these petty crimes is a failure to pay a $2 max fee. A local Portland attorney states that she has had more than 20 cases of immigrants who have been arrested for fare evasion. These people have a case open with ICE and will be deported. The problem is that Latinos are being targeted, arrested, and eventually deported for not paying the fee, while others are given a fine. There cannot exist two different sets of laws for people. And when is it okay to have two different sets of punishments for people, and who decides what kind of punishment a person receives? TriMet officials do not have the authority of arresting people. TriMet Code 2910A, and fare evasion is a violation of TriMet Code. In Oregon, undocumented immigrants are deprived from obtaining a license to drive, and many people depend on public transportation as a means to get to their jobs. People are often living in fear, and we are tired of being treated as if we were not part of the society. No person should be deported or displaced from their home because they have failed to pay a public transportation fee, and there is no justification for people being separated from their families. Quite frankly, this isn't about not paying a fee. It's about targeting Latinos and immigrants, those who look different, and it is unacceptable to have established double standards that incriminate Latinos. We aren't asking for special treatment. We just demand equality and justice. We demand that MAC stops attacking our community, and we demand that TriMet stops altogether their collaboration with ICE. We also demand that Secure Communities is banned from our community. And truthfully, it's making us all very unsafe and creating a greater disparity between the community and local law enforcement. We will not tolerate racial profiling. Thank you for your time.
I apologize. When did this happen?
There's an article in the Portland Mercury that talks about more of the details, the attorney that is speaking out about this since 18 months ago has had different cases regarding undocumented immigrants being arrested by MAX. Arrested on the MAX for not paying their fee. And so we believe that it's not okay for public transportation officials to be taking it upon themselves to act as immigration custom enforcement agents.
Sure. I'll follow up and take a look at it. Okay. I'm obviously behind in my newspaper reading.
Yeah, and get informed about Secure Communities, because it is, you know, everyone's very worried about the Arizona law, but Secure Communities is very much so like the Arizona law, and it's affecting our different counties here in Oregon. So
I know that the Office of Human Relations has been very concerned about ICE and Secure Communities. Do you know, has this particular issue regarding the TriMet been brought to the attention of the Human Rights Commission?
I don't believe so. I'm very new to the. I found out about this maybe some weeks ago, and I have been trying to inform the community about what's going on. But it's very dangerous. You know, a lot of the people who do ride public transportation are poor Latinos, and if people are being targeted, if people are just going to live in fear.
And I appreciate the work you're doing at PSU. You were part of the DreamEd press conference.
Thank you for being there.
I appreciate that. If you could stop by my office and talk to Sarah Hussein and get the contact information, it would be very helpful if you could bring this to the attention of the Human Rights Commission.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you
for your time.
Thank you. Well done. Really well done. Can you please read the title for communications item number 1326?
Request of Lou Church to address council regarding activism and social justice.
Lou, welcome back.
Good morning. I appreciate David and Melissa coming with us today and talking about TriMet, particularly with regard to ICE fare inspectors and deportations. I'm Lou. I'm with Transit Riders Union and Portland State Progressive Student Union. The ICE Fair Inspector TriMet collaboration is an unacceptable collaboration. And to the extent that we can involve public officials in our community with holding TriMet accountable on that issue, that will help not only fix that problem, but also make TriMet more accountable in other areas. No person is illegal. Transit Riders Union at www.trimetriders.org is also working on ballot measures. And since the election is coming up shortly and the ballots go out shortly, we urge voters to do two things in terms of issues. To support voter-owned elections and keep that system, as mentioned in previous talks by several of us with City Council. TriMet Riders turned in 1,400 petitions to the TriMet's unelected board of directors against fare hikes and against service cuts, but the board continues to make those cuts and make those fare hikes. We also support, although with a codicil or a hesitation, TriMet's $125 million tax for 150 new buses on the November 2nd ballot for seniors and disabled riders. Seniors and disabled riders should not be punished because of systemic TriMet mismanagement practices, including things like collaboration with ICE against so-called illegals. In addition, I think I gave some information. Transit Riders Union supports the Reedville Cafe boycott to elect the TriMet board, stop the cuts, and stop the fare hikes. I think boycotts are just as effective and sometimes more effective than ballots, particularly with Citizens United, where democracy locally and nationally seems to be gutted by right-wing Wall Street interests, where donors are not accountable and not transparent. In the three-minute time frame, I just wanted to mention, we appreciate council members that have helped on TriMet and tenant rights and housing issues, and Progressive Student Union, along with our campus and community coalition, will continue to work on these kinds of issues that promote human rights and the rights of transit riders.
We have a presentation, which is item number 1327. Would you please read the title?
Annual presentation from Travel Portland.
Welcome back. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
This is the annual presentation on our partnership with Travel Portland, which is the city's visitor and convention bureau marketing arm of the city, and its CEO and president is Jeff Miller. Welcome.
Thank you. Very nice to be here in front of you, giving you our results this year. Also, I'll be talking about the downtown marketing initiative, which we took over this year, so that is very exciting. I will be asking my board and staff to do the presentation, since it's not visual, with finger puppets and interpretive dance, so please be prepared. And I will flip along in the packets that you have with you. One of our greatest accomplishments this year, which I'm very proud of, was our certification by our national organization, DMAI, or the Destination Marketing Association International. They have a rigorous program of reviews and measures that of internal operations and organizational strength for organizations like ours, looking at everything from accounting policies and governance to written policies and procedures to ensure that we are well run. And we are part of this elite group of DMOs that have this certification now, so I'm very proud of that. This year, we produced a lot of video assets to increase our online presence, and you may remember that Portland Perks is the name of our leisure marketing program that connects visitors with hotel rooms and Perks coupon book, which has shopping, arts, retail, restaurant, and other savings. Sockeye Creative did 5 videos for us for the Perks coupon and 5 for the Green Meetings Toolkit, which are very, very clever. And I was going to show you today the video with Cheryl Van Clacken, who is played by Courtney Haymeister of Livewire, and she plays a slightly annoying morning show hostess, and she interviews Storm Large in this video, and it's hysterical, and talks about the perks package, and it drives people to our website to book a room.
I hope you'll send us the PowerPoint and that so that we can post it online, because I just noticed that in the packet. Sorry that we're not seeing it.
Well, I'll be glad to send those to you. They really are terrific, and they make you smile. We used not only Storm, but Chelsea Kane, the author, David Machado from El Centro, and Art Alexicus. Excuse me, I always get that from Everclear. I knew I would do that. But they are, it's a terrific video. The performance measures. This year we want to recap what our measures were, and the quarterly reports were provided to you for more detail. We do a report every year with Dean Runyon, and the metro region spending was $3.5 billion from the visitors industry, which was down 7%. So that represented 28,900 jobs in the region, which is down 30,900. So clearly a healthy tourism economy equals jobs. We generated over $54 million in local taxes. And of that $3.5 billion, $563 million was spent in eating and drinking establishments, $476 on accommodations, and $90 million spent on cultural tourism. And that includes everything from museums, art exhibits, theater, science exhibits, and the zoo. In terms of the Oregon Convention Center, Travel Portland booked over 246,000 room nights associated with either the convention center or single hotel pieces of business. And we use an economic impact plan developed by our organization and tweak it for the Portland area, but it really looks at spending by delegates, the vendors and exhibitors at those conventions, and we created over $127 million worth of direct spending, and that's not with any multipliers. And that's from taxi drivers to food carts to restaurants to anything that they may be using in terms of their show. So it's a pretty big economic impact. You'll also see our return on investment, and there's two numbers there, one for Merck and one for the city, and those are based on the different amounts of money that we use. And it's important to note that we book these conventions over many years to get to a year. So our work into the future, I mean, we're booking for 2016 now, and as all of you know with your work at the VDF, that's a very important tool that we use.
So since we don't have the PowerPoint, I just thought maybe you should point out the return on investment, the number, or I'll point it out, for the city's portion of hotel, motel, lodging tax, we're getting a return on investment of 48%.
48 to 1. For every dollar that we spend on the convention marketing from the city's money, we get a 48 to 1 return. So clearly a big return to the city and to the citizens of the city and the businesses of the city. That's really where that economic impact hits.
And I think the other number to point out is that the convention center already this year has realized over $9 million, and the goal was 5.75. So even with the down economy and with some conventions not coming, we're doing much better than we even hoped for, and I do think it's due to Travel Portland and the Visitor Development Fund, which Commissioner Saltzman and I have the honor of serving on. It's been very interesting to see how we market the Convention Center and our other facilities and make sure that we do our very best to capture as much of these tourism dollars as we can.
Well, it's a great time to be in this business because there's a lot of interest in Portland, so we're glad to have the partnership. You know, and once we book those conventions, the real work begins, and our convention services team last year distributed over 150,000 pieces of promotional material to meeting planners and delegates so that they know how to access business and things to do in Portland. We gave direct service leads to over 2,900 businesses, and that was direct business access for those meeting planners. We did 46 site tours of conventions on the way to Portland to really get them ready for their convention in the future year and find those other venues that they need to book and other things to do. And we visited 32 conventions the year before they came to Portland to drive those delegates and really enhance the attendance in Portland for that convention, because we know that it helps not only the meeting planner and the convention, but it helps Portland with the more delegates that we have. And the housing room nights were over 13,000. So it's a pretty important business, and it takes a lot of the services team's time to really make sure that we are at the peak of our service. The next slide is the Visitors Development Fund. And I pulled this slide. These are just funds for convention center business. And you can see the hotel VEF grant for those pieces of business is $485,000. But I'd ask you to note that the hotels also rebate an extra $471,000 out of their pockets to bring those meetings to town. So it's a very, very important partnership. And when you look at the funds allocated for events not in the convention center, at the Rose Quarter, Memorial Coliseum, and other places, we're up to $659,000 in grants just in this year. And those secondary priority events would be things like Jehovah's Witness at Memorial Coliseum, Skate America, the Platform for International Animation. So it's a pretty wide variety of folks that we're bringing to town. And as we look at hotel occupancy, you know, this year to date, you can see that we are looking much better. Our occupancies are better than last year, both in the Central City and in the Portland market. Our average daily rate is finally up to last year, so that's been climbing nicely. But the real number here is to look at room revenue and those increases, and I know the hotel community is very happy to see those. We are not to pre-recession levels yet, but we had a very, very strong summer, and it's so far this year we are looking very strong into the fall. So I'm very excited to be able to report those numbers, and as you know, the city benefits from those high occupancy and revenue numbers into the general fund, so it's great to see that. You know, one of the newer initiatives that we've been working on for a while are the Target Cluster Business Conventions. And we've been working with Jillian Florin at Greenlight Greater Portland because we know the economic impact of those conventions and what that might be. And Jillian is will be working directly with a few conventions to see how we might better interact with the vendors coming here to recruit that business to Portland. We've chosen so far this year American Wind Energy, Grace Hopper Women in Computing, the Green Meetings Industry Council, and Open Source. So as they have those big trade show floors, Jillian and her group will find a way to interact with them in various ways to see if we can't recruit that business. One of the other big accomplishments that we did this year were the meeting planner input sessions, and we had 6 sessions in Chicago and D.C. with over 52 meeting planners. And we hired Dave Radcliffe, who is a professional out of Spokane, to facilitate those with the meeting planners to really get at what can we be doing better as a city, as a bureau, to recruit more of that business. Our regional team, local team, and our chair at the time, Steve Falstick from the GM of the DoubleTree, went with us, and we listened in the other room, and it really gave us the ability to hear what the meeting planners need out of Portland. One of the most interesting comments out of those meetings were, we know you're green, but what else are you? We don't hear much about Portland. And of course, we believe all of our own press. We see all of our own press. And it's terrific, but we know that we've got more to do. So our job this year will really be in talking messaging in those other markets and to those meeting planners about the Portland experience. Enhanced public relations will be a big piece of that. And you'll see later that we have over $10 million worth of public relations coming out of the Travel Portland team, which is a pretty amazing amount. So if I'm a planner living in Chicago or D.C. and I don't hear enough about Portland, you know, our efforts this year will be to combine with some Merck dollars and leverage what we're already doing in those markets on the convention side and bring media into it. So we've already seen articles in the Chicago Sun-Times, and we expect to see even more of those coming, but it will be our way to increase our visibility to those meeting planners and also to those delegates in those areas. Value proposition is something that's very important. We did find that airfare is perceived as expensive coming into Portland versus other destinations, and we work closely with the port. There is a bit of a price differential there, so we'll work very hard on what that messaging needs to be on the value proposition of the other reasons to come to Portland and the savings with no sales tax and other things.
Airfare is perceived as expensive to travel to Portland as opposed to other West Coast cities.
To other West Coast cities and to other destinations. A lot of the delegates are East Coast delegates. Obviously, that's where the population centers are. And when we had the port analyze for us other destinations versus Portland, and there is a bit of a differential depending on where you're going and the amount of lift into our destination. It's not great, but there is a perception on those meeting planners' part that is a deterrent for our destination. So our job really is to tell the story of no sales tax and all the other savings that those delegates have beyond just an airfare differential. So we'll pay a lot of attention to that this year. We work very closely with the airport and with TriMet, and the meeting planners tell us that it's often the simple things, and one of the things they're already working on would be a button at the MAX station at the airport that says downtown, So they don't have to know which zone, how much, where I'm going, just downtown. And we would hopefully have the same button downtown that says airport. You put in your $2.35 and you go. So it's those little simple things that we're going to work on this year with our partners. And I think that's an easy one. Planner feedback. Clearly, the area around the OCC needs to be developed. We all know that. And I would be remiss if I didn't say a headquarters hotel would certainly be a nice addition to our package. But getting the Sizzler block torn down and a plaza there will be helpful. And one of the ideas was to take food carts there when we have a convention in town. So how do we create that Portland vibe by the convention center? And it was terrific to hear that they want the Portland vibe. They're not looking for big chains to be around the convention center. They want it to feel like downtown. So we really do have a reputation for a great downtown and how that can translate. Convention-specific maps, and really there's just, these are lots of little ideas, but the big thing here will be an iPhone app or a phone app, and we're working on that. We're working on the budget for that. It's a little bit more expensive, but a key driver for us is something that we know we need to be in that space. Microsites, which is the next page with the banners, and we do a microsite for almost each convention coming in town. And the information, it really connects them to their meeting, their hotel room bookings, and the things that they would want to do. And if you look on this slide, obviously would have very different information for the National Gay Volleyball Association as opposed to the exposition of the Controlled Release Society. Now, the Controlled Release Society is a group that studies controlled release and things like drugs. So when you take your sinus pill and it lasts for 12 hours, there's a society for that. Something you didn't know.
They've been to town, or they will be to town?
They have been to town.
How'd it go?
It went great. There were a lot of controlled release discussions. And the gay volleyball went very well, too. They had a great time. Social media, again, we're testing social media with some of our groups because we want to be the most forward-thinking bureau in the country and really helping them with their social media. Some groups more than others are more interested in that, but it's something that we'll work on. The next two slides really just talk about Travel Portland social media initiatives and the things that we're doing in Twitter, the Green Meetings Toolkit, our blog, Facebook, and how those interrelate and really tell a more robust story. And we use that information. And this is someplace that you'll see later that we've also been able to leverage the Downtown Marketing Initiative into what we're doing and have some cost savings, but also have a very robust conversation about what's going on downtown in the social media space. And print media, print and online media. Last year we had 351 placements from our team with over $10 million of ad equivalency, which is how that is measured, which is an amazing amount of press, and we had a very strategic way of going about that. I have some magazine covers for you. The first is El Korea, an article on Portland. And this kind of press really is way beyond just the leisure travel, but it's our footprint, Portland's footprint around the world, and we kind of see ourselves talking about the lifestyle that we all enjoy here and how do we do that. There was an article in National Geographic Traveler, which is the most respected travel magazine, and you can see our cup of coffee there. Smart Meetings magazine, which talks about the importance that every destination knows about citywide conventions, and you can see our MAX train there. So we get a lot of press on our transportation here, excuse me, which is a very good thing. A Japanese magazine from Oregon with DIY, which our DIY message is spread around the country and around the world very, very well, and it's exciting to see that. I was just in Japan and met with Delta in both Tokyo and Nagoya, and there's a real connection to Portland and the product here. And those people, and as I texted our mayor, Mocha Daisan in the Oregon office, was very excited with our presence there and the mayor's presence there and all the work we're doing there. You'll see the media research tours for this year, and we're going to pay particular attention to food and wine and culinary tourism. We know that consumer spends a lot of money, and we should own that space even more than we already do, and how do we tell that culinary story? And we look at our leisure program, the Portland Perk program, which really connects, again, those visitors to hotel rooms and the coupon book. And we had a return on investment of 34.1 to 1, and that's a pretty terrific investment on the leisure side. And that's just with our hotel online booking engine. The next page, and I had hoped to have this to show you here today, but it's at the printer right now. This is a sneak preview of the public art brochure, and with the new MAX alignment and all of the new downtown art, we worked very, very closely with our partners at the Regional Arts and Culture Council, And they gave us all the information on the art, and we produced the brochure. And it's probably the number one brochure that we give out in the Visitors Information Center in Pioneer Courthouse Square. People see our street art and are very, very intrigued by it. And that art map really allows them to see what they're looking at and take a tour on their own. So we're always excited to partner with RAC and Eloise and her team. You know, international tourism, we work a lot on the direct flights, both to Amsterdam and to Tokyo, and we work with tour operators in those destinations and also the U.S. and Canada, and we have, this last year, over 1,047 departures just with tour operators in their books and online. Pretty terrific results there this year. What we can't measure are those individual travelers that decide to come to Portland and the many touches that we have via PR media online is all very important. We produce each year, you can see the French, English, and German language guides that we distribute in those countries, again, spreading the message and what you'll do in Portland. There's a couple of screenshots from work that we've done in France, which is a very, very growing market for us with tour operators. IACE Japan, which is a tour operator company. It's always fun for me to see the Japanese and Chinese websites with pictures of Portland in them. Delta Airlines in Japan, we have a couple of very good packages with them. That's very important. And you'll see in the Vancouver, BC slide, eHome Holidays, which is a large tour company there of Chinese nationals, and they love coming to Portland, especially with tax-free shopping. So it's that's been a very growing market for us. I like to report to you each year what our top-ranking membership categories are. You can see we're spread far and wide and really do take seriously those partnerships that we need to make sure this destination fulfills that economic impact promise. We look around the region to ensure that we have broad regional representation, and you can see, obviously, Multnomah County has the lion's share, but Clackamas and Washington understand being a part of the Travel Portland message and certainly in other counties throughout the state. As the gateway city, we know we have to be extra vigilant to make sure we move those visitors not only to Portland but into the region and also into the city. This last year, 19% of our members are minority or women-owned businesses, and we, Ron Melton on our team, did a terrific job with our membership team, and we have a scholarship program for businesses, minority businesses, coming to Travel Portland, but also not only a scholarship but also a mentoring program to help them better understand how to access our services and grow their business. And that's been, it's been an exciting program and very well received. You'll see on the next page that we have a multicultural advisory council, and that was something that was formed in this last year to really help us have community leaders, and you can see the list of who those folks are, help us with access into that meetings business and do a better job and really listen to what do we need to do as a destination and as a bureau to attract more of that business? And this has been a home run for us. We're very excited about those partnerships. Certainly, we still work with Roy Jay. He's an important contact for us in that meetings business, and he is a part of this Multicultural Advisory Committee. So we're working very hard in that area. As you know, we've got the Community Action Committee that looks at transportation, development, redevelopment, and public safety. And we know that what's good for Portland is good for us in tourism. And Veronica Reinert on our team works with all of your staff to make sure that we have a tourism point of view as we go through this process. And Travel Portland also has an education and training foundation, a small one, that we give to scholarships and training programs for students. And you can see who we gave to there. Outside In is a great example of where we've asked them, and they created a curriculum of hospitality jobs, an internship program, and so far we've placed five young people from internships into full-time jobs in the hotels. So that's been a real home run for us too. It's a small program, but one that we think is very, very important. I'll now move into the Downtown Marketing Initiative, downtownportland.org, and this is a recap of our work for the last year. It was very exciting for us to take this on and really look at how can we leverage what we're doing in the Travel Portland space with the DMI space. And we think that we've gotten some very nice results here. On the next page, we've got the Downtown Retail Marketing Advisory Committee, the DMI committee, and you can see many business leaders that are helping us make sure that we stay focused on the job at hand and drive business and folks in the region to downtown Portland and into the core. it's been a good partnership there, and one that we've really been excited with. The Max Green Line opening in September of last year, and you can see that we had over 20,000 people attend in Pioneer Courthouse Square. 83% of those merchants said that it was very impactful to their business, and you can see a couple of the pictures there. I know all of you were probably at Pioneer Courthouse Square that day, and it was great to be able to promote that. The holiday campaign, we're already well into planning for this year. Mayor Adams was able to see the holiday campaign for this fall. We're a month ahead of schedule, a month ahead of where we've ever been, so we're very excited about that, and it's been a great program. On the next page, you'll see the ad that was produced for Portland Monthly and many of the newspapers, a really terrific sort of call to action in that ad. Also, the window cling that the retailers have really enjoyed and has been something that's been terrific. We do a perception survey pre and post holiday, and you can see what that campaign was this last year. But I thought it was important to point out that in 2006, where we started from at 41% favorable and got to 58, and we're already starting at 66% favorable now. And that's not just this campaign. That's all the work that you're doing on the panhandling, the sidewalk management. And so, you know, our job is to really tell that story. We will start doing a perception survey in the summer now to really find out what that regional consumer thinks about downtown. So we'll keep you updated on those results. One of the things that we did this holiday season was created a bounce back coupon for parking. So you could, in the first quarter of this year, January, February, March, you could bring your coupon back and get 2 hours of free parking. And we had over 1,200 redemptions in the first quarter of this year, which is pretty terrific. So we're doing that again. Obviously, Smart Park and Charles Dumont is a good partner of ours and on the advisory committee, and they've been very generous with giving us some programs like amnesty parking days on the Saturday before Thanksgiving and the day after Christmas, and also during dining month, they gave us a $1 off coupon, so that was very, very helpful. Social media, you can see we got started in the holiday season, and their current followers on Twitter and Facebook are even better. Travel Portland's Facebook is, we have 10,000 people and 17,000 on Twitter, so being able to leverage those against each other and really grow that message is very, very important. We don't have as many as the mayor on our Twitter account yet, but for a commission
of
visitors...
One can only hope.
For a commission of visitors bureau, we have the most in the country on Twitter. Just a couple of screenshots from our social media, and one of them is talking about the compassion coupon, which I'll talk about in just a moment, but... you'll see next the advertisement for June dining month, and then on the next page, the window clean, which was June of this year. And one of the things that I think that we're doing better and better is asking for stakeholder feedback before we start these programs. So we sat down with a group of restaurateurs and said, what do you need? How can we help? And how do we go about this in a way that helps your business? And the result this year was June dining month, three courses, $25. And you can see the statistics there with 50 restaurants, 90% would participate again, and we'll do that again this year. 30,000 people visited the unique website, and we had 260 redemptions of the Smart Park. So this was a program that the restaurants really, really enjoyed. The compassion coupon on the next page, you know, this was an interesting project for us because it came out of meetings with the mayor and Commissioner Fish's office on anti-panhandling and how do we engage in a way that makes better sense for Portland and is a very Portland way of doing this. And the compassion coupon was what we came up with. We were able to partner with some city money, the Portland Business Alliance Charitable Fund, and some Travel Portland money to come up with money for new avenues for youth to create a drug and alcohol program. I think we're live. A drug and alcohol program that where they put a counselor on the street to really make a difference. And we asked them to make sure that they made something that was new and different, not just continuing to do the same thing. And we're very excited with their efforts there, and they've done a great job. And this last slide really tells you the promotions that we have this year and what our calendar will be. And we've truly moved to a full year campaign. And I think it's a very exciting campaign. We've already had over 6 stakeholder meetings for a holiday campaign. So people are really engaging with us very early and getting their message in, and we want to make sure that we do a better job of that.
So could you just tell me again how the compassion coupon works?
There are online coupons, and you go on and print those coupons out, take them into a retailer, and for each coupon taken to a retailer, we will give $5 to New Avenues for Youth, and we have a $25,000 donation for them.
And they have presented their program at your community meeting, and it's been very, very successful from what they're telling us. Great organization, but a new program.
So that they go, folks can go to the Travel Portland website, print out the coupon.
DowntownPortland.org website.
DowntownPortland.org, thank you.
And we tweeted that out on social media, and that program went through September, and we will come back again with similar programs and try and find that charitable component as we move forward to make sure that we are part of the solution in making downtown an even better place to come visit and shop. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions you have.
Mayor, I have a few. First, Jeff, I guess we're not on, you are. I'll speak up. Congratulations to you and your team. I mean, in the time that I've served on the council, you keep...
Push it again. I think you have to wake it up.
You keep lifting the bar in terms of the work at Travel Portland. We really appreciate your efforts and the efforts of your team. I just returned from a few days in New York City, where I went to collect an award and spend some time walking around the city. And while I was there, they announced that the homeless count, street count, was up to 34,000. And of that, about a little less than half were children. And there were people sleeping on the sidewalks downtown, and there was some panhandling going on. Although my sense when I got out to the outer boroughs is the problems have been displaced quite a bit. The reason I raise that is that there's been some recent stories in the press which seem to be anecdotally driven about our downtown versus other downtowns. And you said something that caught my attention when you said we have a reputation for a great downtown. And that my experience as someone who works downtown, spends a lot of time downtown, is that it's safe and very vibrant, and it seems to be just getting more vibrant over time. But I guess I wanted just to get your thoughts as to whether there's something unique about the challenges we face in downtown Portland, or whether in your travels it's more of a national problem. Not to say we can't do better in terms of how we do outreach and our shared goal of getting people off the streets into housing and jobs. But do you have a sense of the context?
No, I think we clearly have a very, very exciting downtown, and the street scene, it's all part and parcel of the same thing. And I think while we do get a lot of comments on the number of panhandlers and the aggressiveness of that, and it's not just people panhandling for money, it's also people asking for signatures. We have, obviously, that is also impedes people's ability to move about. But we also get comments that it's a very nice way of doing it, and it's still a friendly city, and it's non-threatening. So we balance all of that, and I think our problem is no worse than any other city. I do think that we do a good job as a city of getting the people around the table to talk about how can we make a difference. And like the Compassion Coupon, which is only our piece, there were a lot of other things that you've done as a council to make a difference in people's ability to move through downtown safely and feel safe. And obviously, if we've got people coming from small towns like the Lutheran Women's Association, we want to be very, they're coming from very small towns, and this is something new to them. So we want to be very vigilant on how they move through the city and careful with them. But it's something that we partner with you on, and I think it's been very effective.
Well, that's a good segue to another point I just wanted to make, which was with the mayor's leadership, we had a $1 million supplemental this year for the budget to address some challenges downtown. And our goal is to look to how we can address particularly homelessness downtown, with the goal of moving people from the streets to transitional housing, remove some bottlenecks, and activate our system more effectively. And Mayor Adams, we'll be coming back to council very shortly with some recommendations. But I want to thank Jeff and his team, because they were at the table helping us craft the proposal which will be coming to council for support. And I think we have the opportunity to do something very innovative with that additional money which the council appropriated. Jeff, another thing I just wanted to mention is the brochure on public art. You know, I was lamenting the fact recently that I didn't have a document that had all of Lee Kelly's art in connection with the museum show. And then I went to the museum, and they actually had produced a pamphlet that shows... That's what happened there. I always find that my comments are better when accompanied by music, but
if you can do that, interpret it as a
Thank you, Colin.
Sorry.
A little downbeat if you could.
I think you should watch the video.
We'll come back to that. But what I want to share with you is that they in fact have done that brochure, and you know, I'm going to ask them if we can reproduce some copies, because there's a lot of people I know would like to see the public art collection of Lee Kelly. They've done a marvelous map of their own. But the other thing has to do with your reference to phone apps. I think that the thing that overwhelms all of us when we go to a city is kind of figuring out among all the options what you want to do. And when I go to New York, there's two apps that I have on my phone. One is through the New York Times that lists their top 100. The other one is through a magazine, Time Out New York, which has the advantage of by neighborhood. You can click on wherever you are in the city by neighborhood, and they will give you their best choices. Is that within our reach someday to have a similar app that guides people who are visiting us?
Very much so. Our first job will be to get our website more mobile-friendly than it is today, and that will happen next month. So that's the first thing we'll do. We're working on the budgeting, and there are a lot of companies doing phone apps. And our question will be, should we be contracting with a company to do a phone app of Portland, or should it be more organic? And, of course, Portland being DIY, we think that there's a more organic nature and way to go about
it. Civic apps.
So that's how we'll look at this and decide how to populate it, because other people besides us probably can do as good a job, if not better, than we can. But it's very much within our reach.
Final question. Mayor and Commissioner Fritz and I were at Pittock Mansion last night with some emerging young leaders and a couple hundred people there. We're reminded what a beautiful venue that is. So the city owns, but then has operators for things like Japanese Garden, Land Sioux Garden, Pittock Mansion, Rose Garden, not to mention hundreds of parks and trails and rec centers. Do we do a good enough job, and I'm asking you to be critical if necessary to me as the Parks Commissioner, do we do a good enough job making those platforms available to groups that come to our city and want to do gatherings and events? We do have some of the most beautiful backend places to do them. Is our system user-friendly enough for people that might want to come here and use our gardens and other places?
You know, it is. Of course, cost always comes back to those groups and wanting discounts. But we stay very, very close to all of the parks, especially the gardens, because they are great venues for people bringing meetings to town. So it's something that we pay a lot of attention to. And quite frankly, it's very easy because we have such great relationships. With the zoo, with the parks, certainly the gardens. I think you do a very good job. It's been easy for us.
Through Civic Apps, and we'll follow up with you, we also, someone is working on an app for initially all the publicly owned public art, and then after that people will be able to load on free art that might not be in the public ownership but private, but is accessible to the public, so we'll get you hooked up.
Well, Brian White from our online strategy team is here, and I'm sure he's listening to this, so we'll get it taken care of.
Great. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Anything else?
I've got the video.
Oh.
Nope.
Oh, you paused it in a good place. Oh, I see. That is nice.
Super swanky seat.
where Storm likes to do a little bit of her writing. So don't see that, huh? Right? So Storm, tell us about Storm.
Well, I wrote a show recently called Crazy Enough, and yeah, and it was very successful.
I'm a little parched. Do you mind if I
just... Oh, pretty parched. Sure.
Fantastic. Pretty parched. Okay.
So,
just a little... Do you want something?
I'm good.
Anyway, you are safe.
I moved here in 2002 from San Francisco and started playing music and it's better.
You booked this through the Portland Perks package, right?
Of course, yeah.
Oh no. What? I need you to get the free continental breakfast, right?
Right.
It's free. My muffin. It's so delicious. And it's so free!
I actually have to go. I'm shooting a music video today, and I have to get going.
Can we come, Sam? Can we go?
Thank
free
you so much.
Parking, huh? That beautiful day.
Yeah, I saved $20. Portland Perks, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's still... I'll be right here. What have we learned today, Miss Storm?
Don't forget to book your Portland Perks package through TravelPortland.com or you'll be very, very sorry.
Exactamundo! I think somebody has learned a little something from this lady right here. But also don't forget that you can get fabulous coupons and dining with this fabulous Portland Perks coupon book. It's just so wonderful. Oh, God. You know what? We should have a ladies' night. We could do our faces and our nails and we could just talk all night. Storm in my house. Look out. Storm warning in my kitchen.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. Very fun to hear.
Oh, once is probably any other discussion from the council?
Well, I would just like to commend Jeff and the staff of Travel Portland, as well as the board, for doing outstanding work on behalf of the city, the metropolitan region, and really our state. And I think, as I pointed out earlier, a 48% return on every dollar we invest in Travel Portland is certainly a good return. And you're doing a lot to help the city. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's fun to do so.
And I also want to thank you. It's actually 48-1. It's better even than 48%.
Yeah,
it's an enormous multiplier and a lot of work from all of the staff. And then people come to Portland and have a wonderful time because indeed Portland is a great place to live, work, and visit.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank you for you and your team taking on the downtown marketing initiative and providing an even more enhanced strategy and coherence to that effort. Our visuals and have always been great, very strong, but you've helped put the pieces together and activate the grassroots with store owners and customers in a way that I just think is fantastic. So thank you.
You're very welcome. We've got a good team doing that.
All right, thank you. That was a presentation, so we're able to move on to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any item from the consent agenda?
1332.
To the regular agenda?
Yes, just the regular.
Okay. 1332 is pulled. Anything else? 1344, Commissioner Saltzman, is that right?
Yes.
Is that go to your office or just
yes.
On regular?
Return to my office.
Unless there's objection, it returns to your office.
Yeah,
why don't you read those? Or that one, yeah. Read that title.
1344. Authorized application to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for a $200,000 grant for brownfield cleanup at 10420 Southeast 106 and Southeast Foster Road.
Returns to Commissioner Saltzman's office unless there are objections. All right. Can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Consent agenda is approved. Let's go ahead and do the
Please read the title for 1332.
Create a new non-represented classification of web designer and establish a compensation rate for this classification.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a good thing. We're reclassifying and actually saving taxpayers money. I pulled the item to point out that although the position classification is needed to fit jobs functions accurately, hiring for this position would require an exception to the city's hiring freeze. And I simply wanted to emphasize that in voting for this creation of classification, I'm not saying that I consider the particular position critical and that I know that there will be additional scrutiny of that as we move forward.
Great. So, do we vote on it?
Yeah. It's an emergency.
Oh, sorry.
We'll pass the second reading on the regular agenda next week.
I think they wanted to recruit. Can we apply? How do we apply an emergency to it?
We need a motion for someone to make an emergency.
So it would have been an emergency.
It would have gone to a second reading next week.
It'll
be on regular because it was cool.
Okay, that's fine. So it'll go on to second reading next week. All right. That gets us to the regular agenda. Can you please read resolution item number 1346?
Direct the Office of Management and Finance to finalize the draft intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to provide funding for replacement of the Selwood Bridge.
As mayor, I'm currently working to deliver three regional transportation projects that will improve circulation in the region. Two of these are in the south-southeast Portland area, one of the most transportation-constrained areas in Portland. These two projects are the Selwood Bridge and the proposed Portland to Milwaukee light rail line. Last week, I convened a meeting with regional leaders, including Multnomah County Chair Jeff Cogan, to discuss how we can both move forward both of these projects. We walked out of that room with a written agreement on the draft IGA that is before you today. Key points of the agreement include that the City of Portland will contribute up to $160 million, right, or 30% of the total bridge replacement cost, whichever is less. The City will commission an independent third-party review of the project, working with the County and Clackamas County and ODOT in consultation with Congressman Earl Blumenauer's office and also TriMet, to look for cost savings. The first $40 million in cost savings will be split dollar for dollar evenly between the City of Portland and any project funding gap, with additional savings split proportionally among the bridge partners. And Portland will direct the first $20 million of the cost savings, if any, that it receives to help fill the funding gap in the proposed Portland-Milwaukee light rail line. With this agreement, the City will make an unprecedented financial commitment getting this project rebuilt, and we will ensure a regional light rail line which has been on the books for decades also kicks off as planned next summer, and the 14,000 jobs that go with it. I'm pleased to see this IGA move forward. In addition, I'm committed to working with the county to ensure that any safety impacts with the new bridge are understood and mitigated, and I've directed my staff to evaluate the operation and safety of Tacoma Boulevard as bridge plans move forward, and I will actively pursue funding to improve the safety of the Tacoma Boulevard as part of this project. As the first regional leader to make a financial commitment to the Selwood Bridge project, I'm pleased to have worked with Chair Ted Wheeler, Chair Diane Lynn, and also now Chair Cogan. And want to acknowledge Commissioner Maria Rojo DeStefi and Deborah Cofori's work on this project as well. There's a Q&A session, there's a Q&A document and additional comments in the binder. Any discussion from council?
Mayor, I have one question.
Yep.
To the extent there are cost savings, are there any, have we identified any current legal restrictions on what we can and cannot spend that money on, in connection with the Portland Milwaukee Light Rail?
Yeah, it's gas tax money, so it'd have to be spent on gas tax eligible aspects of the Milwaukee Light Rail line. The city's current $30 million commitment, though, is from funds that will not be restricted to gas tax eligible projects. And given the size of the project and the fact that it will be retrofitting a lot of streets and roads, we don't think there'll be an issue in terms of being able to use the savings to actually fill the hole.
Thank you.
Anyone wish to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
We've one other technical thing. We are doing a resolution at the request of both or the bond council, so that our commitment is there. It's on the record, but it also allows bond council to look at whether it's most cost effective for the city to do the bonds or for the county to do the bonds. So that's why it's a resolution. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor, for many things, including giving that presentation yourself. It's very fitting, since your office did the yeoman's work on this, that you presented it to us. Contrary to what has been written in the press, we in this building are committed to working collaboratively, especially on issues which we all agree are important to the city and the region. The Selwood Bridge is one of those important issues, along with Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail. The mayor and his staff stepped up to the task of getting the IGA crafted and completed such that the citizens of Portland and other transportation goals could be efficiently and effectively met. This is a perfect example of this council's collaborative approach, regardless of what some in the press are inclined to fabricate. We are partners at ODOT, Multnomah County, Clackamas County, TriMet, and our federal delegation have all participated, as we do on many transportation issues, in supporting a solution that will work on many different fronts. This is a great example of governments working interjurisdictionally to get things done. So thank you to the mayor, to your chief of staff, Tom Miller, to board chair Jeff Hogan, for all of the hard work that has gone into this, TriMet, ODOT, Congressman Blumenauer. There are many to thank, and I'm very appreciative of all of the work and the successful outcome.
Mayor Adams, thank you for bringing this home, and to all of our project partners, the good folks at PBOT, at the city council level, our county colleagues, Clackamas County, TriMet, and our federal delegation. It was a good team effort. This council identified the Selwood Bridge, along with our other jurisdictional partners, as a top priority for the region. Today we're fulfilling the commitment to become significant funder of making that happen, and the Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail is one step closer to a reality as well during a time of incredibly challenged budgets and funding constraints. So I'm very pleased that we've reached this point, and thank everyone for the constructive role they've played to bring this home. Bye.
Saltzman.
Well, to my mind, there is no more pressing public works project than the replacement of the Selwood Bridge, bar none. And it's good to see this agreement unambiguously nailed down by us passing this IGA today. So please vote in time.
Adams?
Just to underscore that the best case scenario, and we'll all work to meet it, the groundbreaking for the Selwood Bridge would happen the summer of 2012. The groundbreaking for Milwaukee Light Rail will happen next summer, the summer of 2011. And we, 2011? Yeah, why are you giving me the face? Oh. Did I get it wrong? Groundbreaking for the Selwood Bridge would be the summer of 2011. So both of these projects are needed, and they couldn't have come at a better time in terms of the high unemployment rate that we're facing. I want to thank everyone involved, especially want to thank Tom Miller and my staff, and Catherine Sharlow. Aye. It is approved. Let's move on to, can you please read the title and call the vote for item number 1347.
Authorize a contract with Day CPM Services, LLC, for owner's representative services for the Interstate Maintenance Facility Rehabilitation Project. Fritz?
Aye.
Oh. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1347 is approved. Can you please
Read the title and call the vote for item number 1348.
Authorized contract with Michael Willis Architects for design services for the Interstate Maintenance Facility Rehabilitation Project. Fritz.
So I wanted to thank the Water Bureau staff for briefing me more extensively on this after the hearing last week. They did look into whether the facilities within the City of Portland could manage this contract and whether any more of the design could be done by development services staff. I'm satisfied that those questions have been fully scoped out. I still have some ongoing questions about the cost of the building and the facilities, but we're not voting on that today. We're simply authorizing the management contract and the design contract, and I hope that citizens will be further involved in evaluating as this project moves forward. It is, however, a very necessary project to provide safe and decent facilities for Water Bureau staff at the interstate facility. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
1348 is approved. Can you please read the title for resolution item number 1349?
Declare October 2010 Domestic Violence Awareness Month in the City of Portland.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before us today is a resolution to declare October Domestic Violence Awareness Month in the City of Portland. Domestic violence is a serious problem in our community, accounting for nearly half of all assaults occurring in the City of Portland and resulting in 28 domestic violence murders, including 3 children this year alone in Oregon. Today, I'd like to highlight the commitment we as a city have already made to victims of domestic violence and their families through the newly opened Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services, a collaborative one-stop center located at 102nd and East Burnside in Portland. The center brings together a variety of public and private on-site partners to make it easier for victims and their children to receive and access the services they need. The center's on-site partners include the Multnomah County District Attorney, the Multnomah County Sheriff, Portland Police Bureau, Legal Aid Society of Oregon, the Oregon Department of Human Services, Volunteers of America, LifeWorks Northwest, Bradley Engel Healing Roots Center, the Native American Youth and Family Center, the Russian Oregon Social Services, Catholic Charities El Programa Hispania, and IRCA. Left out a couple, the YWCA, the Sexual Assault Resource Center, who has 2 advocates at the center to work with sexually exploited victims of human trafficking, many of whom are also experiencing domestic violence. I'd now like to introduce the center's director, Martha Strawn Morris, and Megan Collins of the Legal Aid Services of Oregon, whose civil assistance is one of the more sought after services at the center. And I should add, the center has been open a little over a month.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We're going to have to use my computer. I'll have to write it from here. We're having problems with that.
That's fine.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Let me get it out here for
you. I really appreciate you recognizing Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The month gives us an opportunity to reflect on the gravity of domestic violence, and from that reflection and consciousness, renew our public and private commitments to eradicating intimate partner violence in all its forms. And I also appreciate the opportunity to update you on the Gateway Center. We've just opened just over a month ago. I don't have a many comments. I'm not going to take a lot of your time, but I am appreciative of the opportunity to share a few things that we've learned so far. Next slide. So when I was last year, I explained that we were creating a warm, safe, and welcoming environment for victims and survivors and their children in which to access services, because we recognize that the potential trauma that can happen during help seeking is mitigated by creating a therapeutic environment. I think we've done a good job in really creating a safe, comfortable space, and it's improving access to the public and private services that are available in the center. Next slide. I think you all really are clear that there's a wide variety of services. I'm not going to go through them by name. Commissioner Saltzman just did a good job at that. But it's a nice variety of partners. I do want to emphasize that the restraining order application process, the process that allows restraining order applicants to make an appearance before a judge, the judge sitting in the downtown courthouse and the applicant out at our center at 102nd and Burnside, is up and running. It's been working for a couple weeks. We were, the city of Portland, I think you know, was granted support from the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission to purchase this equipment. And it's a real improvement for an in litigants' experience in applying for restraining orders. This picture is actually of the congressional delegates and Commissioner Saltzman, Chair Kogan, talking to Judge McKnight through the video conferencing equipment on the day of the opening. And that's approximately where an applicant stands when they're applying for restraining order, except they get to be in that room by themselves, which is real different from when they're downtown, when there's a lot of people in the courtroom. And during this process, they have to answer very direct questions about physical and sexual assaults that have happened to them. And so I'm really proud that we're able to offer them some privacy and dignity during that process. Next slide. The last time I was here, I also promised to forward this council's commitment to serving our diverse population well. As you know, we hired our navigators, our advocates from a variety of agencies. We speak many languages in the building and serve a variety of cultures. And I'm really pleased that our participants, as you can see from these numbers, already reflect a wide variety of ethnicities and backgrounds. Next slide. I also promised to ensure that your commitment would be accountable, that we would measure the work that we were doing, ensure we were meeting the commitment and vision. We ask all the participants that come in to fill in a check-in form and a check-out form. We've collected approximately 217 check-out forms in the first month of operation. You can go ahead and click. And these are just a few of the highlights of what the participants have told us about our work. 92% say they have new ideas about how to stay safe after being with us. 94% know more about resources and how to access them. More than 97% are satisfied with their experience. Almost 100% found the center welcoming, and a full 100% said that they were treated with respect by staff and partners at the Gateway Center, of which I'm really proud. So I hope that this demonstrates that we're embodying the spirit and the vision to which you originally gave your support. And as we recognize DV Awareness Month, I really hope that you will feel pride in the commitments that the city has made, not just to the Gateway Center, but also to police, housing, and other resources to address the social ill of intimate partner violence. You can put on the next slide. Here's just a few of the things that participants have said. I'm not going to read them, but these are direct quotes. And I'd like to turn it over to Megan Collins from Legal Aid. Megan is actually the attorney from Legal Aid who spent some of her time in the Gateway Center with us. She's one of our busiest partners, and I'm really pleased that she's taken the time to talk a little bit more about her work today.
Thank you, Martha. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm a staff attorney at the Multnomah County Office of Legal Aid Services of Oregon, and I focus my practice entirely on representing survivors of domestic violence. As you may already know, Legal Aid Services of Oregon is a statewide law firm. We have 14 offices across the state, including the offices of the Oregon Law Center. We provide free legal services, civil legal services, to low-income Oregonians. So who is eligible for our services? To qualify, generally families must have an income at or below 125% of the federal poverty guidelines. That means, for example, a family of two can make only about $1,500 a month in order to qualify. We estimate there are 125,000 people in Portland who would meet this criteria, and there are 12 attorneys in the Multnomah County office. So you can, as you can imagine, we're very busy and the demand for our services is very high. Legal Aid provides a full range of civil legal aid services. Domestic violence has historically been and continues to be prioritized in our office. 40% of our cases are family law cases, and those cases are almost exclusively domestic violence cases. In addition to family law, our office represents survivors of domestic violence in a variety of other areas of law where there's an intersection between domestic violence and, for example, housing or employment. As many of you likely know, in recent years, the low-income population in Multnomah County has been moving east, and in addition, police data has shown high incidence of domestic violence in East County. In 2007 alone, the Portland police received 5,600 reports of domestic violence crimes, and 80% of those came from East precincts. Given then the high concentration of both low-income residents and incidents of domestic violence in East County, Legal Aid was very excited to provide services at Gateway by becoming an on-site partner. We were at the Gateway Center 2 days a week. I myself spend 1 day a week meeting with participants there, and a very experienced paralegal in our office also spends a day a week there. So far, we have been very busy. Our appointments are immediately booked by navigators. We are currently booked 2 weeks in advance. The issues presenting often require immediate attention and often have a direct impact on the safety of survivors, the safety and stability of survivors and their children. The need is overwhelming. I think it's safe to say that if Legal Aid was at the center every day of the week, we would still have more than enough demand. The cases we are seeing at Gateway are often complicated, either in terms of the legal issue, of a legal issue, or because there is some kind of domestic violence-related emergency. In addition, we have seen a number of contested restraining order cases, and now that survivors are able to apply on-site for restraining orders, we expect to see an increase in the number of those cases. We have seen and expect to continue to see at the Gateway Center a great many cases where the survivor is articulating high level of concern around lethality. In addition, we've seen a variety of other cases, including cases at the intersection of domestic violence and housing. I've worked in the field of domestic violence since 2001 and feel very fortunate indeed to be spending time at the Gateway Center, in particular because of the collaborative nature of the project. In addition to the convenience for survivors and co-locating so many service providers in the same building, doing so also provides an opportunity for the service providers to develop relationships and learn from each other in an ongoing way. All of us at the Gateway Center have already learned a great deal from each other. It's my hope that over time, this collective cross-learning will allow the water to rise generally in terms of the services that we're able to provide to domestic violence survivors in Multnomah County, and as a result, that more survivors will get the help they need to safely leave violent relationships. I'm grateful to the county for providing funding for this essential service and for your commitment to ending family violence in our community. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Great work. It's very exciting.
Concludes the presentation. Unless there's questions.
Do we vote on this or do we just take a
vote? Yes, we will vote.
Oh, this is presentation. Anyone wish to testify on 1349? All right, please call the vote.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your continued support and emphasis on working to end domestic violence, and thank you both for all of your work. Multnomah County, the District Attorney's Office, Portland Police Bureau's Domestic Violence Reduction Unit, and the many community organizations that provide support and outreach to domestic violence, including those who act as navigators in the system at Gateway, are all to be commended for all of the stellar work that you do. Domestic violence is a serious issue affecting not only women, but also men and children. And according to the Family Violence Coordinating Council, in the last 14 months, almost 50 Oregonians have died as a result of domestic violence, which is a 40% increase over recent years. So it is important for governments and community partnerships to continue to grow, to help support survivors of domestic violence, and also to work on educating our communities on how to avoid, intercept, and treat the problem before it arises. We all need to talk about this and to recognize that if a domestic partner hits you even once, that is a problem. If you are subject to verbal or emotional abuse, that is a problem. And we have worked very hard, and Commissioner Saltzman has led the council on this, to address the issue of prostitution in Portland and to start recognizing that it is not a benign activity between consenting adults. 50% of the time it's child rape, and it is slavery, and we need to talk about it in those terms. Similarly with domestic violence, we need everyone in our society, and it's not a particular age group that is becoming survivors of this problem. It's something we need to talk about, that hitting your domestic partner is not okay, ever. And we need to find better ways to get people into counseling when interpersonal issues start arising, so that it never gets to the point where your services are needed. That said, I greatly appreciate that your services are there for those who do need them, and I thank Commissioner Saltzman. Aye.
Fish?
I, too, want to compliment Dan Saltzman and his counterpart at the county, Jeff Kogan, for the work that you've done, and Dan, the work you've done historically to address this important issue. You know, Martha, I also want to compliment your team. I've been so impressed with Martha and the work of the people that you've assembled to lead this effort. And I'll put a plug in for our friend here from Oregon Legal Aid Services. As successful as we are locally in funding legal aid, legal services, we still only are able to reach a fraction of people that are eligible and have urgent problems. And so maybe that's a plug for continued federal and state funding for this important service. Before I was elected, I had the privilege of serving as the attorney for the Portland Women's Crisis Line. And so that experience taught me a lot, not the least of which is the dynamics of nonprofits struggling, you know, to meet the incredible needs of our community, but also about the substantive issue of domestic violence. We have so much work to do here, but this is such a promising start. And so thank you all for your tremendous work. And also, I was struck in the PowerPoint thinking about the level of accountability that you've established here, feedback to us, reporting to us, and the community. I think that this is going to be extremely helpful to me as we embark on the next chapter here, which is putting wraparound services for homeless people under one roof. You're sort of the first out of the gate, if you will, showing how we can do it to address domestic violence. Next summer, we'll open the Resource Access Center, which is built on a similar model of putting services for people under one roof. I guess I believe we have much to learn from your experience. So again, Dan, congratulations, and thank you for an excellent presentation.
Well, the opening of Gateway Center in September was really the culmination of about a three-year planning process and feasibility committee. And I'm really pleased that we were all able to, everybody around the park table was able to move forward and ultimately agree that this presented much potential to improve how victims of domestic violence get help, get it helped in the most easy manner and accessible possible. But I particularly want to thank a couple of the on-site partners for being right there from the very start. As soon as we got the funding, several organizations stepped right up, had no hesitation, many of these with very tough budget circumstances, starting with Multnomah County, starting with Legal Aid. Leslie Kay was at the table from the very start saying, we want to be here, and then statistics Megan just gave about the incidents of domestic violence in East Portland and East County certainly underscores why you want to be there. But also the Department of Human Services, their Economic Self-Sufficiency Unit, again another agency, very strapped for funds, but there was absolutely no hesitation on their part. They were going to be a part of it from the start. And the other one I want to say a lot is a sexual assault resource center, because now, for the first time, there is a place people can go who have been exploited, been trafficked because of prostitution. There is a place they can go and actually talk to people and get help, in addition to, as August mentioned, sometimes conciliatory domestic violence issues. So those are three partners I wanted to single out. I did want to also not only thank Commissioner County Chair Jeff Kogan for his partnership in this, but also I want to recognize Martha Strong Morris, who we hired as director, and she helped to really bring this home. And her leadership, I think, has been outstanding in terms of molding the team at the center into a working, high morale team.
Thanks.
And then finally, I want to acknowledge Shannon Callahan of my office, who has been working with me on the start from this idea as a concept to a reality. And without Shannon's assistance, we wouldn't be here today celebrating. At least being open 1 month and commemorating and calling attention to domestic violence as well. Thank you. Aye.
Adams. Well, thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your perseverance and success at knitting together unlikely layers of government and well-intentioned, but sometimes difficult to corral departments within those governments to create something that's really special and effective and truly addresses for the first time in a compassionate and humane way the needs of victims and their loved ones of domestic violence. It's a facility that I know others will look to as a best practice and as an inspiration to emulate. And so thank you. That's really wonderful. And thank you all for taking this vision that Commissioner Saltzman saw to fruition and operating it to its best of its ability. We need it very much. Thank you. Aye. Resolution is approved. We have special guests before we say goodbye. Carrie, who's reading the names?
I'll read the names.
I'm terrible at Russian. But we have a special guest, a group of folks. A group of folks from Khabarovsk, our sister city, six jazz musicians from the College of Fine Arts at Khabarovsk. They are here on an exchange visit sponsored by the Portland Khabarovsk Sister City Association, Portland State University, and Mount Hood Community College, and will be performing at various public and private venues around the area, including the Sister City-sponsored Bridge to Russia fundraiser gala, 6 p.m. tomorrow here at City Hall. You can buy tickets at the door. And I'll let you introduce them.
Okay. So Stan, as we call your name. Stan Sipushansky. College instructor and people's artist of Russia, Vyacheslav Trofimovich Zakharov.
Please stand.
College instructor and music department director, Valery Rizyalovich Husainov. College instructor and leader of his own jazz band, Ilya Yuryevich Lushnikov. Fourth-year student saxophonist, Ekaterina Leonidovna Bledmykh. Fourth-year student vocalist, Lyubov Alexeyevna Fadyeva, and third-year guitar student and young artists competition winner, Dmitry Alexandrovich Tien.
Welcome, glad you're here. Are you going to translate?
We have English speakers as well.
Oh, English speakers,
okay. My name is Alan Ellis. I'm president of the Portland Khabarovsk Sister City Association. You may have recognized me also with one of my other volunteer hats as the president of the Beaumont-Wilshire Neighborhood Association, but I taught Russian in Portland for over 30 years, and during my last 14 or 15 years, I was at Lincoln High School. We had a sister school in Khabarovsk, in our sister city, and that's how I got involved in the Sister City Association. This Khabarovsk is located in the Russian Far East. It's right above Manchuria, right on the Amur River, which is about as wide and deep as the Columbia. There's another river like the Willamette, the Ussuri, that comes in, and it's an inland port like Portland. But it's also the jazz capital of the Russian Far East. And so we've been working on this plan, this exchange program, for 2 or 3 years. And we finally have our award-winning group from the regional fine arts college, performing arts college in Khabarovsk. Three instructors who are award-winning musicians in their own right, and three of their prize students. And the exchange program is designed so that we will hopefully later on this year send instructors and students from Portland State, Mount Hood Community College, Lewis and Clark, to Khabarovsk to perform as well. They performed in a number of different venues already since they've been here for just several days. last night they brought the house down at Jimmy Mack's. Tomorrow night, as the mayor said, we will have Bridge to Russia, our annual fundraiser gala with authentic Russian cuisine and entertainment featuring our guests. So I do want to thank you for recognizing them. They're a great bunch. And if you can, drop by. We open the doors at 5:30 and we'll go to about 8:30 and they'll play a couple sets. We also have some other Russian folk musicians that will be playing as well. Vyacheslav Sakharov is the leader of the group, and he has won the highest award for a musician in the former Soviet Union. He's quite a saxophonist and clarinetist. And I'd like him to say some, to address you, and this is Sergei Melnik, who's a native of Khabarovsk and a member of our Sister City Association and our cultural coordinator. Yes,
Мы благодарны американской стороне, заодно российской стороне, что наша поездка усилиями общими состоялась, и это прекрасно, потому что налаженные добрососедских отношений между нашими городами-побратимами – это очень важно в деле сотрудничества, взаимопонимания, укрепления мира и прочего.
They're very thankful for this great opportunity to come to Portland, and on both actually sides, Khabarovsk side and Portland, it is finally happened. And during the time they've been here, they had already many interactions, and they're building, continue to build relation, cultural relations, and with schools and colleges, with departments of Russian speaking departments as well too.
Русские говорят, что лучше один раз увидеть, чем 100 раз услышать. И это правильно, потому что особенно это важно для молодого поколения, и мы увидели по-настоящему живьем ваш город, вашу страну, ваших людей и прочее.
Russians have expression, it is better one time to see than 100 times to hear. And it is great again to be here, especially for young students, because it is very inspiring. And they do have opportunity to learn from staff of the college, it's great to know staff, and explore culture of America as well.
Это поистине великая страна, великая нация, и здесь есть много чего у нас русских можно позаимствовать и поучиться.
America is a great country, and for Russians here a lot to see and to learn. And to share in the future, and that's why they're here. They're very pleased to be here.
Мне удалось посетить вашу страну более 10 раз, но с каждым разом я убеждаюсь, что чего-то я еще не досмотрел.
Vyacheslav has been here for 10 times already, about 10 times, and each time he impressed by something and learned something.
Ну да, мы каждый из нашей группы он увидит со своими глазами и поймет, что ему нужно. И что ему более всего необходимо увидеть и узнать.
And for each of the delegation of the group, it is great perspective and opportunity to see in their own eyes and bring it back to Russia and share with Russians.
Спасибо.
Thank you.
I can't think of a better way to strengthen relations between our two cities and two countries than to have this kind of musical exchange. And I also, and lastly, I want to thank Noah Siegel, the Mayor's Director of International Affairs, Kerry Clark, Arts and Culture Coordinator, and Tim DeRoche from the World Affairs Council for holding a meeting for us before this and making our group feel very welcome. So thank you very much.
May I ask one question, Mayor? Tim DeRoche wears another hat, which is he's a wonderful disc jockey on KMHD, which is our dedicated jazz station. George Hocker's wife, George works for me, Marcia, also has a program on KMHD. For those of us who may not be able to see you in a club while you're here, Tim, is there any plans to have any of this music on KMHD this week?
I think that somebody had talked with them about being on KMHD.
I can answer that. They were yesterday at the KMHD. there was a little challenge, and they didn't get to the point to get the music and CD of their own from Khabarovsk. But we do have, and we might can provide to Tim, and Portland listeners could listen some music from Khabarovsk. That's a great idea.
And we'll be, in any event, you'll be performing tomorrow night here at City Hall, is that correct?
Yes, and there will be also a few jam sessions, one of them at WIFS by Union Station will be tonight at 7:30 or 8:30 through 10:30. And on Sunday with Ron Steen. They're both Ron Steen jam sessions, but today is Ron's birthday. He won't be there. There will be a great drummer and vocal and
so
on.
So the public can see you tonight at Wilkes?
Yes.
At what time?
I
believe it's 7:30.
7:30 at Wilkes is
yeah.
In the, it's at the train station.
Yes.
City government owned train station.
Their last night here, it's traditional to have a farewell evening. And we're going to have that open to the public at on the 18th, which is Monday, at RRF Restaurant, which is just north of 92nd and Foster, a Russian restaurant and a nightclub. And they'll be performing there as well, and we'll have Russian cuisine. So you have a number of opportunities
great.
To see you here.
We welcome you and glad you're here. Thank you for the work on the Sister City Association. We stand adjourned. Oh, wait. Sorry, I take it back. I make a motion that we hold an evening hearing on November 3rd at 6 p.m. for the Airport Futures Plan at the Port Headquarters.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carla, can you please call the roll on the motion?
Fritz. I learned about this at the Cully Neighborhood Association meeting last night and quickly checked my schedule. Indeed, our schedules know about this even if we didn't. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. It passes. We are adjourned.
Sam, I'll see you at, I'll pick up at 12 points.
Okay, great.
Not that I know. But I don't know. I can't remember. I can't keep it all straight.
I try, but I can't. Good work with the with all the
mic.
Hey Brad, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
So Brad's following up on the comment in the calling along.
I told
Brad.
Can I hear you?
Yes.
I haven't read it home yet, but I understand. I'm curious.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Actually,
you're wonderful.
I always say, I'm going to catch up. I'm going to catch up.
You said something about fabrication in the media.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, I haven't actually.